Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the broadcast with Amanda, Shandy, and Colleen. My name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is season 6, episode 36, episode number 261. How's it going?
Good, or like whatever.
God, Mom, why do you even exist? I hate myself.
It's like, what is April? It's just like a month that people live. And it's not quite winter, but it's also not spring either.
Right? And like,
it's just like so much.
I'm the ugliest podcast around. I look at some of our friend podcasts, like the Real Weird Sisters, and they're just so pretty and they have everything. And we'll never be like that. We'll never do that. We'll never be them. So we're talking about my so-called life today. I watched 6 episodes yesterday.
I'm so excited.
So excited.
And I gotta say, I reread through my notes, and I love them. Love the show, love the notes, love all of it. It's so good. It's so, so good.
Oh, it's so good. It was just really, it'd been a long time since I've done a rewatch, and I had forgotten how much, I didn't realize how much I had forgotten. So it was like really, really enjoyable to revisit.
Yeah. I can say I've seen it now.
Yes. That's like a major life accomplishment.
I have so many thoughts. Like, I finished it last night. And because I had watched a bunch of episodes during the day, I wasn't able to, like, take notes like I usually would. And I was trying to think of all the thoughts I had for the 4.5 episodes that I watched when I wasn't taking notes. And, you know, I hopefully some things will come back to me because I know that I lost some things. But I loved it. I loved it. Like, first it started and I was like, oh my God, this show. Oh my God. It's so 90s. It's so slow. And then the more we got into it, I was like, oh my God, this show. I love this show. Like,
so good.
Like, yeah. I knew it was coming to an end. I was like, oh my God, how is it going to end? Like, what's going to happen? At some points, I was like, oh God, Angela, you can't get with Jordan Catalano. He's the stupidest fucking human being on the face of the planet. Like, I had so many thoughts. I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself here.
Jordan Catalano and his magical miracle growing hair.
Oh, the dad? Yeah, I know, right?
No. Oh, Jordan, you're right. He starts with short hair.
He does.
And then by episode 3, he's got like shoulder length hair.
Yes.
His hair goes amazingly fast.
I noticed that too. I was like, oh, look, he got a mane. But the dad.
The pilot was shot a very long, like very far in advance of the rest of the series.
And then they were correctly like, actually, he would be better with a little bit longer hair. Let's keep it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because also you can tell, like, Claire Danes looks considerably younger in the pilot. Because she was just at that age where, like, you know, puberty is just a bitch. And, like, you look like you're, like, a child one day. And then all of a sudden you're a teenager. And it's like you absolutely see that from the pilot to the next episode.
Yeah. Okay.
Colleen, one of the very early conversations we had on this podcast was about the fact that we are the Catalano generation. Now you get the reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Except, you know, Jared Leto still sucks.
He's probably still that dumb, too.
I know. That's what I said to Jay. I was like,
character.
I said that to Jay. I was like, he's such a method actor. Do you think that he walked around and acted that stupid on set all the time?
But just gotta say, in the 1990s, like.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, yeah.
Super fucking hot.
I was also incredibly taken aback by the wardrobe.
Okay, so
plaid.
How many? Yes, right? Stripes on plaid, on plaid, on plaid, on.
It was the 90s.
Flannel on silk, on flannel, on flannel. Oh my God.
One of my notes was. One of my notes was watching this show is so awesome, but also so uncomfortable. And then another note was. We need to bring back 90s fashion. So many layers, so much flannel, and clashing patterns. So comfy.
Oh, the clashing. It would be like zigzags and then flannel.
Yeah. I kind of want to go get myself a pair of overalls.
I actually looked at overalls the other day. I was like, my hips are too big for these now, but I just want to see.
Overalls.
I know you have overalls. I'm so jealous. I loved overalls.
We're going to try them this summer. They're baby carrying overalls. We are going to try them again.
Oh, man. Love I have it. To say.
So excited.
Honestly, up until the last, like, 2 or 3 episodes, the parents were my favorite characters.
On this rewatch, I very much related to the parents more than I ever have.
Like, it's a very, very different experience. This may be a silly thing to
say. Right. It's like, this is a silly thing to say, but I am the oldest I have ever been watching this show.
Right.
So
it was kind of like when
they're like in the early 40s, right?
They're 40.
Yeah, they are.
I like literally my jaw hit the floor in that episode where she's like, but I'm only 40. Or like, I'm 40. It's so old. Like, I can't have a kid again. And I was like, oh, God. Oh, God. They're 40. Why does 40 look so old in 1994?
I mean, to be fair, the Golden Girls were like 50. And
yeah. That's true. Each generation, like, you gain a decade in terms of like, or you lose a decade in terms of how like, old you actually look when you hit that age.
Exactly.
Does that make sense? I don't know.
I had two thoughts with the parents. My first thought was like, oh my God, like the parents are just there to, like, they're there to remind teenagers that grown-ups still bone. They're like, your parents do it, except this. Like,
right. Well, actually, in my reading, and this makes total sense, it was because they hired Claire Danes for the main character, who was actually 15 at the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, minors, and she had to go to school for part of the day, so there was just less time that they could shoot with her.
Oh,
so they had to expand the role of the parents.
That's great.
So that they could turn the episodes around in a reasonable amount of time, because it was, you know, it's television, you're like shooting week to week.
The Halloween episode with them in their costumes is freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
I love that episode, and I loved it more now, like, as a real and proper adult, where, like, I could, like, properly understand what was happening.
Yeah.
Right.
And whereas, then when, like,
she takes the handkerchief behind her back at the end.
Yeah.
Yep. And now I completely forgot what the other thing with the parents were, but the relationship...
The weekend up at the...
Oh, well, no, that was just...
Oh, my God.
I felt like, so it was those last couple of episodes with the parents, though, where, you know, like, they were, like, so it starts out, like, he's got this other girl, kind of, and then all of a sudden, like, I guess he decides to tell her, like, no, and then, like, everything is wonderful and great, and they're, like, hot for each other, and, like, you know, boning every episode, and then... You know, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, once he starts the restaurant thing, they're just, like, it's like a flip switches. And all of a sudden, it's like all those other, like, you know, 15 episodes that we saw of them. It was just totally, it seemed like just totally kind of different. Or maybe it's just because I watched so many, like, so quickly.
No, I think that's, like, one thing that I actually really fucking annoyed me about the series this time is that I can understand, like, his whole, like, midlife crisis and maybe, like, on the brink of having an affair. Like, I mean, as they say, even, like, when he's talking to his brother, it's so fucking basic and, like, cliche, but it's cliche for a reason. Like, that happens to a lot of people. I can, I love that he, like, has to work through it. It's complicated with Angela because she knows and he doesn't know that she knows. And he, you know, like, makes the decision to not go through with it, and there's, you know, puts, like, work into the couple. So then by the end, when all of a sudden it's just like, once again, it's just like, is there something, like, what is fundamentally going on here underneath the surface? Because I don't like this idea that just because he's, like, the dad in the 90s, he's supposed, I don't know, it's just
where he just kind of seemed like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, just like, fuck, dude, and you know where this is, like, stop spending so much time with her. You
Like,
go into business with her. I don't know. Like,
she has these, like,
I feel like, did they really address, like, why their relationship was splintered in the first place? Like, I think it was actually, I think the show is very, like, subtle in its complexities.
I agree.
You know, and I think all along the way, like, you can see their, you know, Patty and Graham's personalities are very different.
Very different, yeah.
And they never really, like, they acknowledge it, but they never address it. So it's like they just, yeah, they keep, like, re-sparking the physical part of the relationship, but they're not always, they're not necessarily working on, like, the emotional part of the relationship. So I think that's why then it starts to deteriorate again towards the end of the series. Like, it actually does make logical sense to me.
I guess that makes sense. I guess I thought there were scenes where they were, like, working on their emotional relationship, and I don't know. And I guess, like, more than anything else, I just get really frustrated with Graham about that. That's it.
Yeah. No,
that's fair.
But as, you know, I was talking about with Jay, I do like, and I know that there's a whole lot more to talk about, though. The way it ended was so abrupt. And I was like, wait, that's it? That's it? Like, but I do like that, like, if you want to get to existential level about it, everybody, with the exception of maybe Rayanne, kind of got what they were looking for in the end. Like, Brian Krakow got acknowledged by Angela. And it wasn't that he was, I mean, he was rejected, but he got acknowledged by her and, like, was recognized. And she got to go off with Jordan, and Ricky figured out who he truly was.
Found people who love him, and by the way, is that actor who plays in Inventing Anna.
What?
That's,
really?
Yeah.
I thought she looked familiar, and I thought it was just because I've watched it before.
Anyway. Sorry, keep going.
Oh my god, we need to talk. Okay, so also, happy birthday, Judy, before I forget.
Oh, happy right. Birthday. Happy birthday, Judy.
Yay! Birthdays! Yeah. I love birthdays! I hope you had a good birthday, though. But, where was I? The teacher, the actor that plays the gay English teacher. Who was he? Like, he's from something.
I have seen him in other,
He looks like a poor man's James Spader, but he's been in a lot of things.
Yeah.
And he's been in Inventing Anna.
He was from Inventing Anna?
He was. He was one of the other journalists that was
In Scriberium. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that was him. I thought you meant the guidance counselor was the woman from the guidance counselor in Inventing Anna. The guidance counselor in My So-Called Life looked like the female reporter in Inventing Anna, and that's who I thought you meant this entire time.
Got it. Nope. Mm. Yeah, no.
Oh.
Delia. We're talking about Delia. Which is also, like, such a 90s name. Who did not want to own everything in the Delia's catalog?
I know.
I did.
I know. And all the Claire's jewelry.
Yep. Just one went with the other.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we totally need to talk about Inventing Anna if there's time when we're done.
I haven't finished it yet.
I've only just watched the one episode. Can we maybe make that our May thing that we talk about?
Or just finish it for next week or whenever you can, and we'll talk about it whenever you can.
I just binged a show. I can't binge another one.
All right. Whenever you get to it, we'll finish it. We'll talk about it whenever you're done.
Okay.
But, Shani, did you finish it?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm close, but not yet.
Okay.
Interesting. That's what she said.
And while I'm at it, watch The Dropout. I'm about to read the book and then listen to the podcast.
Oh, gosh, there's that too. And here I'm just like, I can't wait to get back to Bridgerton season 2.
Oh, dude, I need to watch that too. I can't believe I heard that
there's like no sex in it.
That's no fun.
I have heard that it is less sexy.
Yeah.
I have heard that.
And I'm like, don't you realize that's the only reason we're watching it is for the sexy times?
I know. If we just wanted a period piece, we'd watch The Gilded Age, which we did.
That's true. Did watch that. Enjoyed that as well for totally different reasons. But enjoyable nonetheless.
Yes. Okay. Anyway. So sorry. So yes. Ricky got what he wanted, which was figuring out his identity, saying it without
fear.
And being accepted. The mom, Patty, got to meet Jordan Catalano in the whole series. That's all she wanted to do was meet Jordan Catalano.
Yep.
Sharon, you know, finally, I guess, was happy with Kyle again.
No.
Oh, well, it's like her and Angela are friends again. Her and Rayanne have sort of made some kind of peace.
Yeah. I think the sex is better with Kyle.
Okay, well, maybe.
Because they're not dating.
Right. That's what I meant. Okay. And then how does it end for Rayanne?
She thinks she ends, like, she's like, I have no friends.
Yeah. So her story is actually kind of sad, but everybody else sort of gets what they want, which, you know, I guess is nice.
Yeah, Brienne kind of gets what she deserves.
But does she deserve that? Like, I mean, think about her family situation. Like, the way she was brought up, she was not given the tools to, like, make better choices and stuff.
Right.
It was Ricky, though. And Ricky, I mean, that's that classic age old whatever. Like, you can say, like, somebody wasn't given the tools, and then you can easily bring an example. Like, I completely agree with you. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah.
But also, you know, isn't that part of adolescence and growing up? Is that, like, even if you aren't given the tools, like, your actions have consequences? And
well, and she'll take that into her 20s, sure. But, like, she, I mean, I can't imagine what it would be like to be an early teenager with an actual substance abuse problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Rianne has always been like my favorite character.
Really? See, I think that Angela and Rianne were the worst two of the characters.
Ooh.
But that's just watching it for the first time as a grown up.
Say more.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so Angela reminded me so much of me. Like, the moodiness, not so much the, like, being obsessed with somebody part, but, like, just the moodiness and the constantly fighting with your mother all the time and, like, you know, the I could feel her as me in that, like, anytime she was on screen and looking, like, morose and, you know, just moody and shut down and, like, I viscerally was brought back to, like, you know, being that teenager. Mm-hmm. And I was like, God damn it, I was terrible. Like, I was annoying.
See, there are some, like, I identify with her so much, too, and maybe in different ways. And I think that's part of why I like her, which maybe that just makes
me, that's part of
very self-centered. But
I
nostalgic in a good way. Like,
not for me.
I mean, not
I'm so hard on myself that, like, recognizing my behavior in that, I'm, like, mortified by it. I think that that's why sometimes I was like, Angela's the worst. Like,
you know, adolescence. Just the trajectory of, like, beginning to figure out who you are, like, taking things way too seriously when you're that age. I mean, I think that's, like, sort of universal to teenagers. And then, like, finding your place and, like, that whole, like, starting high school and sort of falling in with a new group of friends and falling out with some of your best other friends. Like, that is exactly my high school experience. And it's painful and like, things can mend. Like, I'm now friends with my Sharon again, but you know, like, it's, it took a while and but you have to do that. But then at the same time, like, I mean, she just has this, like, perfect family and perfect house and perfect life, and, like, in that way she was very opposite of me, and it just seemed so comfortable.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah, no, I just watched her and I was like, saw myself and just self-hated the whole time.
But that's just growing up, like,
yeah,
man, high school, you know.
Yeah.
And then, like, with Rianne, like, I got it, but once we got to a certain point, I was like, come on, Rianne, now you're actively making choices. Until she told, was it Danielle's episode, The Weeknd, which, by the way, was absolutely hilarious.
I love The Weeknd. I forgot how late in the series it came. Like, you know, it's like there's certain episodes that are just like burned into my brain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was interesting rewatching the series and, like, where they actually fell within the totality of the story. And it was like, I thought that was earlier. I thought that was
because they have to be no longer friends, like, fighting when that happens.
Right.
Yeah. I had, like, completely forgotten that part of the story.
But honestly, like, I had, you know, this was like, come on, Rianne. Like, you have people that are supporting you. Like, you're clearly choosing chaos for the sake of choosing chaos. You're a drama queen. But then she had that conversation during the Weeknd episode where she says, like, I always think that, like, life is slow or boring. I see my life in slow motion and I try to think of how I can speed it up. And then I was like, oh, okay. Suddenly the character makes, like, that one line made the character make a lot more sense to me.
I mean, also, but she has a terrible mother. And
she does.
No boundaries at home.
Absolutely.
She doesn't, though. I think her that's mother, like, the interesting thing about pairing the two mothers. I think her mother her mother loves her child.
Like, sure, she's just, but she, like, enables
lacking
her,
in certain ways.
She enables her alcoholism. Like, it's not okay.
Her mom is an enabler because her mom has her own issues. But and that's also, like, you're both right. Her mom is an enabler because her mother has her own issues.
I agree that she loves her daughter.
But like, we had that conversation between her and Patty, and clearly her mom still does have her finger somewhat on the pulse in general. It's just, they're very different mothers.
I think it's also, And I think coming back to it at this point in my life, I think I realized just how eloquent of a story, like, Rayanne's character is like the epitome of addiction. And like looking at addiction in a real way and like thinking about like the context of the time in the 90s that like, what did we know about addiction that, yeah, like the mom was an enabler or like the mom just didn't have the tools to understand what her child was going through and how to adequately help her.
Her mother was also not addicted, pushing booze on her.
Right. Because perhaps we understand the complexities of addiction and how like Rayanne literally can't in moderation. She's like, you know, I taught you how to like drink with moderation. And like, if you are an alcoholic, you literally cannot do that.
Right.
Like,
Rayanne also has a lot of emotional pain. But Rayanne also, A, she doesn't understand moderation because she's 15. And B, she has a lot of emotional pain because, as we know, her father was never in the picture and he only sends her money sometimes. But I also agree, you know, with what Amanda said is how many times we talk about like, we can't paint people in broad strokes because the tools aren't there for certain people who are not brought up with certain education and certain tools themselves, and the cycle perpetuates and blah, 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 blah.
I agree, but I also think in the fact that we're talking about alcoholism
right.
and addiction, I think it is slightly different in the fact that if you think about at that point in the 90s, we didn't look at alcoholism as a disease. We looked at it as just like, you're a drunk and this is something you can control. And like a 15-year-old is just does not have the capacity to control or understand.
That's a good point.
Why their brain is forcing them to drink. So I think if you're looking at, you know, Rayanne's mother from that way, that she's like, I taught you, like I have alcohol around to teaching you how to drink in moderation. But like if she is already on this accelerated path where like she's clearly exhibiting alcoholic tendencies, like it is a disease, and we just wasn't treated that way in larger society at that time.
Sure, no, and I agree with all of that. I'm just still saying the child is 15. Like I understand the idea of like teaching your children to drink in moderation and maybe like it being okay, which is weird. Like, I don't mean to come off as like the one who's like super anti-alcohol.
No. And I totally get it. It's a weird, I understand.
But,
like,
yeah,
for sure. I get the concept of like, you know, like Frank had a glass of wine with, you know, his parents at the dinner table when, I don't know how old he was, but like, you know, probably a teenager. Like, I get that. I get all of that.
But so did I, and so did my sister.
Making lots of alcohol available to your very young teenagers is like...
Yeah, that's true.
In the presence of alcoholism or not, that just seems like a bit of like, it's like too early. She wants to be too much of like her friend. And again, like there's no boundaries set up. And then when things get out of hand, she tries to set up boundaries like after that party by kicking everyone out, but it's like too late. And so it's not surprising that Rayanne doesn't have boundaries either. And she does, like, lines get blurred and like, you know, like hooking up with Jordan when she's hammered because she's, you know, like,
and that's a great point. I mean, that's a great point too. And I think that really just goes to show like how nuanced and, you know, wonderfully well written and well considered all the stories and the characters of this show are. Cause it even seems like the way you're describing it is Rayanne's mom is somebody who also just doesn't understand that a 15-year-old is not an adult and can't be treated like an adult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not saying she's a bad person because she's not. And she, like, you know, she's like working two jobs and she, like, this is, you know, like that. I feel like in a way, like I sort of come from a similar, my mom was very different than her. Like my mom didn't do tarot readings every night. My mom was like Angela's mom at the socioeconomic level of Rayanne's mom.
Gotcha.
So I can like see like elements of both. But you know, so she's super hardworking. She works like two jobs. She's like trying to make ends meet. I get it. And so it's very hard to maybe like be as present as maybe she should in her daughter's life when all of that's going on. But again, I think it's just set up to be a little bit too loosey goosey.
Yeah. Well, it's like, and I've always really loved that Other People's Mothers episode. So that's, you know, the episode where Rayanne has the party.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's always really hit me, that episode. Like, when I think of my so-called life.
It was three generations
like that, of relationships. That episode. Too. Exactly. So it's like that episode and so-called angels are always the two episodes that like really are just like burned into my brain. And watching the show at, like these different generations in my life, like as a, the show came out in 94. So we were in the fifth grade. We were 10. So watching the show as a 10-year-old and then revisiting it again as someone in my early 20s. And then now revisiting it as someone who is now a parent themselves in their late 30s. And like to see how that episode in particular has hit me differently each time I've watched it has been really, really fascinating. And I like one of the notes I wrote down for that episode. It's like this watch. It was the first time I really understood Patty's character and I related to her the most. And that's the first time that's ever happened in that one. Like, it's like you just pick up on different things. And
yeah,
it's, I think it is a very, it's a beautiful episode in just how complex it is and how it's presenting these two very different parenting styles. And the only thing these two women share is that they both really, really love their daughters, but don't quite know how to connect with them.
Yeah. And it's Patty, Patty killed it in that episode. Like,
and it's even three different
and you just respect the hell out of her.
Yeah. Because that's like, that's, my mom would have been able to do that. That's like,
in that moment, honestly, because I feel like that was more like Patty's episode than anybody else's, because she got to understand her relationship with her daughter and with her mother.
And with Rayanne. I think she really understands why she doesn't like Rayanne. And I think she hadn't quite connected why.
And that made it all the more beautiful when Rayanne came over and told her that she had had sex with Jordan Catalano. And I think that a former Patty, an earlier season Patty, would have not reacted with the poise and the grace and the understanding and the sympathy that she did. When she felt like the, you know, late stage Patty.
Yeah. Well, and I also think that that episode is maybe one of the first times too that that Claire Danes' character, Angela, can sort of like gets a glimpse maybe of her mother as a younger person to like realize that like, oh, right, she like had experiences like this, went to college, went to parties, had a roommate that almost OD'd. And so
who did OD.
And who died. Like, that's a whole new layer of understanding and that maybe she then too can connect some of those dots, which is like, you know, when you're younger, it's like your parents are your parents. And then it takes a really long time to realize that they're actually people too.
They're people who actually have useful advice.
Yeah. And like had a whole lives before us.
Right. That they didn't just exist as your parents.
Or as we're reminded every other scene, still have a full life now.
And by full life, you mean full sex life, huh?
Oh yeah.
Occasionally.
Handcuffs and all.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I loved the parents. Up until those last few episodes where they kind of made me sad that they were on the outs. But I really, really loved them.
But we don't know that. We don't know that they're on the outs. Like, well, they're presented with another challenge to their relationship.
Exactly.
We don't know that they're not going to weather it.
It's kind of left you to think that they are going to weather it because, you know, he makes that choice to leave and she gets trashed the episode before because they left her alone, but it's still not like a knockdown, drag out fight where most, you know, series would have gone. I don't know. I also love Danielle and that she got her turn.
That was so fun.
And she's in love with Brian Krakow.
And this, like, let me just tell you because
And I love Brian.
I love Brian. It's not that I have like a one-to-one relationship with either of the sisters, but I just like have a big family. And so I can see so many of these different dynamics of like, of course she's in love with Brian Krakow. That makes so much sense to me. Like, how many of my older brother's friends was I just totally in love with? And probably the same like for my younger siblings and me, like, and even if you're not in love with them, you just think they're so cool. It was so just perfect.
Yeah. Ooh, before I forget, one thing that, okay, so the outfits dated the show, but, you know, we've been watching Stranger Things, so, like, we know dated shows and outfits and stuff, period pieces. The one thing that did date it, though, all of the Princess Diana jokes, because it was 3 years before she died, and I was shit. Oh, my God, this is so weird.
Well, they loved her. They really loved her. The other thing that really stuck out to me was so many references to the Clintons and especially Hillary. Oh my God, yeah.
The Hillary Clinton joke. Like, it just, we never, some things we are just destined to repeat.
Yeah.
I said that to Jay, actually. Kind of
Hillary Clinton's hair, apparently.
Yeah. I said that to Jay when we watched whatever one of the jokes was. I was like, Hillary Clinton, episode. You know, withstanding pop culture media jokes for 30 years. Mm-hmm. Like, she has always been a punchline. But it also felt like they respected her more, though.
Yeah.
Than, you know, most
especially the women
shows.
In the series.
Because also, what was the... Oh, there was another thing, too. Bill and Hillary, Princess Diana.
The
was
costume.
Something else. No,
sorry.
Was, no, because they wanted to dress... There was something else. It'll come to me that also was in the same... Oh, yes. Okay. The Beatles thing. When Patty says to... What's his face? You know, they say that Yoko Ono was the reason that the Beatles broke up, but it turns out that they really broke up because Paul wanted Linda's father to be their money manager. Why do they always blame the women? And that was the episode where her dad was like the tax cheat or whatever. Because we just watched the Beatles Get Back like 8,000 times, I was like, oh my God, this is so topical right now because we just really saw the proof of how it really wasn't Yoko Ono. But I thought it was kind of cool that was actually recognized, 25 years ago when, oh wait, that was 1994
into 1995.
So that's 28 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that sure is.
Sure is. So 38.
I just thought that was cool.
For a second. Hey, not all of us are 38. Mind you, some of us have a few months
true,
ago.
True, yes.
Hey, you're going to have a one-year-old next week when we record, okay?
A week from today.
A week from today. How do you feel about that?
It's weird. We have a birthday party on Saturday, and I'm like, wow. I just had, like, existential anxiety about it today and how I'm like, oh, my God, we're totally not prepared. I wanted this to be just, like, a little thing, and now it just feels like a very not little thing.
Don't worry about it. She's never going to remember. All you got to do is get her a cake and remember that this probably
Yeah, no, it's not. I don't mind. She'll be fine. It's like, well, oh my God, we have all these people that are driving in from out of town and we're having it in a park because we don't have a backyard.
Oh, I can't wait. Do you have a theme?
We're doing it's like daisies.
Oh!
Because daisies is her birth flower.
Oh, how cute. Love that.
So just simple, easy. Again, we're having it in a park. It was just going to be easy, and it's becoming a very big thing.
Oh,
and
no.
I didn't want that to be a big thing. And breathe, whatever. Breathe. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everyone's going to have fun.
It's going
to
be beautiful and wonderful. And no matter what happens, it's going to be really nice to celebrate her. That's all you're going to remember at the end of the day. Take one good picture of all three of you, and that's all you're going to remember from now on. Shandy's making us dizzy over here. Okay.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. I was looking for my little holder thing for my phone.
Why were we talking about being old? What my so-called life thing?
Bill and Hillary references 28 years ago.
28 years ago.
Oh, no.
Yes. I thought that was kind of nuts. Like something that was recognized back then where it felt like 2022 was when it was finally vindicated. Same like Hillary. Maybe it's the my so-called life curse.
Maybe.
Interesting.
My so-called curse. No, I'm just kidding.
My so-called curse.
Ooh.
Because there were, oh my God, because Princess Diana was mentioned. There's just so many things that was just so dated. And big, that later became big pop culture moments to date them. They wouldn't be dated if big things hadn't happened after that.
Yeah.
Definitely. Anything else, or do we want to get into some... Oh!
I have a few things, but go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Oops, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
Rock, paper, scissors for it.
I just kind of wanted to go through my notes to make sure I didn't forget anything. So My first one is the gun episode, exclamation mark.
The what episode?
The gun episode.
Episode three.
So, like you were saying, the gun Amanda, episode, like, just, okay, like, forgetting sort of, like, where in the series things lie. Yeah, that was really early.
I didn't realize how early that one was as well.
And speaking of things like being cursed and coming back later, and
that was 3 years before Columbine.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it feels almost like...
We're calling this episode my so-called curse. I'm just kidding.
I don't know how to describe what it feels like, but a different time, mm-hmm, maybe? But yeah, also, like, so familiar. But yeah, also, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was rough. Also, second note, Catalano, R.E., the metamorphosis, he goes, that's made up, right? Do you remember that?
Also, Jordan is, like, so clearly dyslexic, and how we never address it in the episode
is,
as a dyslexic, I find it, that was really where I feel unseen by the show.
I'm sorry. Well,
perhaps also something that was not as understood in 1994.
That's true. But just, you know, the fact, like, things like, you know, he's like, oh, that brain guy. I'm like, see, he's dyslexic. Right. I still to this day have to really think about,
oh, is shit,
Brian and Brain, where does the I go? That is literally a struggle, something I have to stop and think about every time I write either one of those words.
Well, that makes sense why he never, like, really learned how to read and slipped through the cracks and nobody bothered to do anything about it.
Dyslexia, what, that backward thing? Episode 7, wrote that down. It's the only time it's mentioned in the entire series.
Is that the same episode with the substitute teacher?
No, that is episode 6, the Dead Poets Society episode, where I was just waiting
Dead Poets
for someone to stand on a desk and, oh, Captain, my captain.
Right. So in the substitute, this is my next note.
Oh, okay.
There's a scene in the French classroom. And so first of all, the female French teacher, on the board, it's written, I was born, like, in whatever. And it's, I was born masculine, but she's a woman, so that was, I mean, whatever, she could have been referring to a guy and just saying I, whatever. But the most egregious part was that there's a flag in this French classroom, and it's from Netherlands, not from France. Same colors, different way that the stripes go. Which was just like, dude, come on.
Oh, man, the set designer really didn't show up for work that day, huh?
Oh, my God.
Like, shit, they got the right colors, not the right, they didn't have smartphones at the time to just, like, type in the country and have it give you the flag. But and then Vic, the substitute, is also in Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Yes, and the West Wing.
Yeah, that guy. Oh, yeah, he's the drunk, English
the ambassador.
Advisor, yeah.
Other interesting West Wing fact, the guy who does the theme song for the West Wing also does the theme song for Myself. Oh,
no way.
Snuffy Walden.
What an interesting bit of trivia.
Hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I kind of loved, like, just while we're talking about substitute, I loved how the substitute teachers, the temp teachers, and then later, like, the English teacher were kind of like the stand-in for the moral lessons. Kind of like how in Harry Potter, like, I'm sorry to bring Harry Potter up, but, like, the Defense Against the Dark Art teacher always had, like, a big propel in, like, how the storyline went. It was kind of like that's
a good analogy. Yeah.
In this. Like, I think it was a substitute that said nobody should hate who they are.
Yes, I wrote that down, too. I forgot how many just, like, good bits of writing are in the show.
And all
like,
of
yes,
it
like, teens are very dramatic and, like, hyperbolic and, like, whatever. But, like, there are just some really good lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And what I loved also about Vic is just, like, how, you know, we all went on that ride together where he's just so cool and he gets people fired up and he's just like such a good substitute teacher, and then you figure out that, like, actually in his personal life he kind of sucks. And there's so many instances in that. I mean, we see it with Graham too, where it's like people are complex, and you know, it just because you do a bad thing doesn't make you a bad person, and on the flip side, like, bad people can do good things. So I liked it. There were two people things we never got to see. People always talk about Tino because he's mentioned in almost every episode and we never meet him, but also
every episode you never see him.
They have a cat and it is mentioned a few times. It's never seen. We never see that cat.
I caught one mention of the cat. And I was like, I have watched this show countless times. And this is the first time I've picked up on a cat.
They get cat litter at one point, like, for the grocery shop. And they talk about, like, oh, did you pick up cat litter? Like, there are references to this cat. We never see the cat in the entire series. Which could be plausible.
What is the cat before this watch through?
I just thought that was funny because Tino is like a well known, that's like a running joke, but like never see the cat either.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Speaking of the 90s, diaphragms. This really brought me back to Are You There, God? It's Me.
Oh my God. Yes.
Not Are You There, God? Maybe it was more like Forever by Judy Blume. Just the talk of contraceptives. And being like, what the fuck is a diaphragm? Like, I kind of know, but, like, we never, like, that was before our time. But there are multiple mentions to a sponge.
Also. Yes.
Like, fuck if I know.
Mm-hmm. But I was also thinking, I was like, well, this was, like, the height of, like, the AIDS.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, it was this.
Yeah, but you're not going to be using a sponge or a diaphragm to, like, guard against AIDS, right?
I don't know what a sponge does. That's why I was like, maybe that's just some weird, like, 90s thing.
I think it's more for, like, contraceptive uses and less for, like. It was, like, a term
I had never heard before. I still don't understand what it is. Yeah.
I think, I think I heard it definitely maybe in Forever and definitely maybe in, like, super early. Maybe the What's Going On With My Body, but I don't know. There's some, like, reference to it in my very young.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just the show.
Yeah, no.
Who knows?
I also love, like, Sharon talking about sex being expected and feeling like you can't go back even if you want to. I felt like that was actually a very poignant thing for a 15-year-old to say.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. And I love that complexity of, like, they, I mean, so obviously Before Its Time in, like, showing, having a gay character in the early 90s, like, I think it was one of the first probably. And then also of young, like, adolescent women talking about sex, and it's not, like, a bad thing. And, like, there are, you know, Sharon, who has done it, Angela, who hasn't, and, like, both are okay. And, but, like, the complexity of what you're saying, Colleen, about how, like, it's also not just one or the other. Like, I really love that. And even the conversation that Graham overhears between Jordan and Angela, and her explaining kind of, like, about, you know, how when she got in his car, it's like driving his car and it's like too much freedom all at once and she's not ready. And she's just like, damn, so great. And all the while, like, never shaming anyone who did have sex, but showing that it's okay, like, you know, either way, like, whatever works best for you. Like, no, just the whole thing was, really great. I also love Jordan's song, Red.
Oh, my God,
just the soundtrack in general. Like, it was, like, such a moment in time.
Right, but that is just so funny. That scene, again, it's, like, up there with the Metamorphosis comment when, who is it even talking about? Oh, and, like, I mean, we heard your song. Like, we know, you know, Red. And he's like, yeah.
My car. There was Ricky he was talking to.
Right. Just so, so good.
I can't believe, but I can at the same time, that the show is so groundbreaking with all this stuff that Ricky is the first gay teenager on TV.
Was he the first gay teenager?
I believe he's widely credited with being the first, like, openly gay teenager on television, which is crazy. And the way that it's just even revealed, where he's, you know, just says, I'm gay, and that's the first time I've ever said it out loud, like, and you see the relief on his face, is actually quite beautiful.
Yeah. That's actually my one big note. I wanted to make sure that we talked about Ricky, because, like, I'm sure I'm not the only young child in the 90s that, he was my first, like, introduction into, you know, a gay character or a gay person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that his character was so well established and, like, just so well crafted and, I mean, beautifully acted.
Yes.
You know, like, I don't think he won any acting awards for his portrayal, but goddamn, he should have. It was just, like, such a beautiful performance. And perhaps I want to do a little more research before we got to this conversation, because I think while he never says, like, I am gay until the last episode, like, we know and like it's alluded to throughout the whole series, but like I think it is also very interesting how his friends, you know, love him, but also completely and utterly disregard the fact that he has any kind of sexual desires at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how many times he has to remind people of his humanity in that way, you know, sort of like, how would it feel like when you're, you know, when your friend went after someone that when they know that you liked them and like, how do you think that would make them feel? And like, you know, and having to keep reminding that like his friends love him, but his friends also don't even acknowledge the fact that like he could have romantic feelings about someone else. And,
because Rayanne,
like,
go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying rewatching it now, it sort of got me thinking in sort of the larger context of like where we were in the 90s and like how pop culture was acknowledging gay characters. And it almost felt like a commentary about how we presented gay characters and how they were always the gay best friend, but they didn't have a sexual life on television in any real way. You know, they were the Jack from Will and Grace and they were there for our amusement and our comfort, but they weren't fully realized people. And it almost felt like the way the writing was like kind of nudging at that notion of like, remember, I'm a full person. I am a full person that has all the wishes, wants, desires, and capabilities of a human being. And it was like, it was just cool to see that this time around.
And all of that you just pointed out, like, I was thinking while I was watching, like, oh my God, how much did this character truly break through to allow other characters to like other portrayals of characters. Now, of course, it took what, another like 2 decades. We had to sit through Will and Grace and, you know, Ellen coming out and, you know, so many other, you know, things. And maybe I'm not qualified to talk about this, but like, I can't help but like maybe be hopeful that people in our age group are more like, you know, accepting and whatnot because, you know, being introduced at a younger age to a character that was gay made it less of like a thing to get used to, like, you know, our parents' generation had to, which is just stupid and terrible, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because what is true, like, okay, so we saw, you know, the series came out before, like, you know, sort of, well, I was going to say well before we were in high school. If you think about it, it's only like 4 years before we were in high school. But at that stage of your life, that's like half your life. Yeah. Right. And so like when I was 10, I didn't know anyone like Ricky. But when I was 15, I certainly did.
Right.
So it also felt very true to our experience. Yeah. But yeah, I think also what's so interesting about Ricky's character is that I didn't even pick up on that when I watched it when I was younger, that it was like sort of groundbreaking that his character would exist in this show. Like it wasn't until I was older that I was like, oh shit, they put a gay character in a series in the like mid 90s.
Yeah. So. Well, and that's interesting. And it's like, I wonder if maybe I didn't pick up on him being a gay character when I first watched it as a 10-year-old.
No, like I know, like I knew he was from I knew he was gay. I just didn't pick up on like that was like groundbreaking. You know, it just, I don't know. Do you just feel so much, especially in our younger years? And now, even now when I watch it, like I just so identify with those characters, even though now we've like really surpassed them in age, but just because of the nostalgia factor, like you're just so much a part of their friend group that like, it doesn't feel, it just, I don't know. It feels natural. Like
it feels natural.
Angela's
for
high school experience feels like very similar in a lot of ways to mine. I never had a Jordan, but like so many other things of her high school experience are just like, yes, that is 100% like what I experienced. And so I don't know. So I, you know what I mean? Like it's just interesting that kid, especially if you're watching stuff like this, like as a younger person, you don't, it's not like shocking to you. Like it's just a portrayal of like, this is life.
It was very, it was eye opening.
You see multiple, you know, and so hopefully now that there's so much more representation on TV and in movies, hopefully, you know, kids are having the same experience where like, for us, we're like, oh, like, you know, Euphoria is awesome because there's, like, you know, actual, like, trans actors who are playing trans characters, and that's amazing. And hopefully for, you know, younger people, they're just like, oh, there's, like, these, you know, high schoolers.
Yeah. Well, and I think the one thing that, like, really, as a kid, and I told you guys how when they canceled the show, I, like, wrote a letter to ABC about, and, you know, yes, a lot you of have what told I wrote in my letter is how much as a young person it really affected me as, like, presenting these characters and these really, like, heavy subject matters in, right, like, a way that didn't over-dramatize it, but it also didn't undersell it. Mm. Like, it was sort of presenting these things in real-life scenarios is how they probably, as I would imagine, would have happened in the real life. And it didn't water it down, but it also didn't over-dramatize it because, like, real life is dramatic enough sometimes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, cause I can remember, like, there's so much, it's like watching the show and, like, watching it on Hulu where it would, like, actually break to an ad. And, like, I could remember, you know, with the end of the opening credits is where, like, you know, for all you youngs, you're not going to remember this, but, like, the billboards on TV where it would be like, my so-called life is brought to you by or, like, at the end of the episodes, like, at the end of the, you know, Other People's Mother episode. It's like, if you or someone you know has, like, a substance abuse problem, like, here's a number to call. Or, like,
yes.
You know, the two episodes that dealt with, you know, Ricky's homelessness, I remember there being I think they might have actually shot something with the actor about, like, you know, if you or someone you know is struggling with homelessness, like, here's the hotline to call because, you know, you couldn't go on a website because not everyone had computers at that day. But you
nobody
could have
had
a phone,
computers. So the internet didn't exist.
Right.
But it's, like, just stuff like that, that it, like, didn't just present it. It also then, like, if, you know, they were aware that they were reaching an audience that needed to be spoken to.
Speaking of the homelessness thing, I didn't like that it was never resolved with Ricky that he overheard the second part of a conversation between her parents where the first part was overwhelmingly positive. And that really bothered me, too. Like, they never got I mean, I know in real life, and that just probably goes to real life, like, you don't get that closure. But, like... Mm-hmm. I don't know. The TV part of me was like, oh, man, when is he going to realize that they love him?
Right. But I think that also goes to, like, the last episode, how, like, you know, it's like sometimes things just kind of end and loose in real life. Loose ends don't all get tied up.
Yeah.
That sometimes you never hear the part of the conversation that you needed to hear to get the full context.
Right.
But, like, they all keep going on and they clearly, like, the relationship is mended, even though they never actually talk about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We have a bunch of feedback on this. Oh,
wait, I have one more.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
Interesting tidbit that we have not brought up. And I think it's broadcast specific, and I think we really should. So go back to the beginning of the series, episode 4. There is a flashback of Angela as a little girl where her dad comes home from work.
Yes.
Did anyone recognize who that little girl was that played young Angela?
Oh, no. Tell me.
Sure
it was a Miss Kaylee Cuoco.
Oh, no way!
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am, it was. I actually went and looked it up to be sure.
Oh, my God. I feel bad that I didn't really even recognize her. Now I'm going to have to go rewatch it.
Yep.
Real quick.
I'm trying to, like, even picture.
It's the very beginning of episode.
No, I can I can see that scene, but, like, I can't, like, look at, I can't see her face. That's crazy. Because she's presented as, you know, it's like a little, well, I guess she doesn't, the red hair is dyed.
Yeah.
So she would have been, I guess, a brunette.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. That's wild.
That is wild.
Like, that looks like Kaylee Cuoco. And then I went and I looked it up just to be sure. So I was like, this is, it's another broadcast callback.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I'm looking at her movie credits.
Oh, no, real quick.
It's a show.
I can't believe that we haven't brought this up, or I didn't bring this up earlier. I really enjoyed that they went the supernatural route with certain episodes. The Halloween episode.
How much ghost stuff is in the show?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So much ghost stuff.
I really like that.
Yeah, it was fun.
I also remember
the angel stuff. We didn't talk about the angel episode.
I remember that being such a bigger reveal, like, in like watching it this time around. I was sort of like, gosh, that comes up kind of suddenly. But there is a bit of like a sixth sense throughout the whole thing where she sort of hints that she's like,
right,
the whole time.
Well, yeah, because Angela definitely has that, because she kept hallucinating the dead dude too.
Nikki Driscoll.
Yeah.
Who I guess was the 1963 Jordan Catalano.
Right.
I think it's really just tell you every generation has a Jordan Catalano.
Yeah. Nope. All right. Let's take a pause here real quick because we've been talking for an hour, and let's take an ad break and we will do some feedback and then see where the conversation takes us. All right, we are back, and we've got a little bit of feedback talking about this episode. The first thing that we have is from David Gott, who said that he had never heard of this show before. I think you were in college or something when it came out, Gott. I don't mean that to be whatever.
Do yourself a favor and go ahead and watch it. It's great.
Yeah, actually, I agree. Mandy and Maggie always mix them up. Maggie says, I've only seen one episode. I want to watch more. Girl, watch more. I'm assuming if you're listening to this now, you have watched more. Margaret said, I just like how he, Jared Leto, is always leaning against stuff. He leans great.
I just like how he's always leaning against stuff.
Which is just like every cute boy in the 90s.
He just leans.
He just leans and has long hair.
Puts droppers into his eyes.
Yep.
He's like, is he tired or is he stoned?
Both.
Both.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
We also got an email from Matt. Take it away, Amanda.
My so-called life thoughts. Hey, broads. I'd never seen My So-Called Life. I'd heard great things about it since its initial run from 94 to 95, but at that point, I was still only watching comedies and cartoons.
Fair.
Even then, I don't know if I would have related to a high school show, as I wasn't even in junior high yet. I never went back to check it out until you decided to make it a monthly assignment.
Yes.
So over the past month or so, I caught up with the trials and tribulations of Angela Chase, her friends, and her family as they try to navigate that angst-ridden time in your life in a decade filled with angst. So much angst. Angst
so angst, much angst.
Angst, angst, angst. Angst, 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 angst. Okay.
Angst, anyway. Angst, angst, angst.
Unfortunately, I have to admit, I found the show to be just okay.
What?
No, I might have to stop reading at this point.
I know, right?
But I will muscle through. I wonder if it would have worked better had I seen it in high school, but plenty of adult critics gave the show rave reviews when it was on, and in the over quarter century since its cancellation.
Including Colleen.
Truly, like that.
I've been trying to unpack why the show didn't hit me the way it hit others. I have some thoughts, but I will wait to the end of the email. Okay. For starters, the show's look was pretty bad.
What?
Especially in the early episodes. What?
Well, because on Hulu it is.
Oh, like the quality of it.
The quality is not great on Hulu.
Yeah, that's... No. I mean, but that's not like a knock on the show.
Yeah, I don't even think I noticed that the quality wasn't that bad.
I did, but I didn't care.
Maybe I just didn't care. Yeah, maybe that's my fault.
I was like, it's from 1994. Checks out.
They were making TV with like sticks and, you know, pencil caps.
Oh, God. Then true.
Okay.
There was no Lisa Frank, though.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. It felt more like I was watching someone's taped copies on VHS than episodes streaming on Hulu.
Oh, come on. So this is just snobby.
I feel like that, yeah, adds...
Get into the vibe of...
Exactly.
Yeah, it adds to the authenticity.
Yeah. Anyway. And there were a few moments through the run where the audio had that digitally swishy sound you hear on low-quality MP3s. Okay, we need to, like, tone it down here, Matt. You're getting a little pretentious here on me. I need you to just tone it down a little. In the show's defense, it's not the only one from that time to have an issue with visual quality. Oh dear, here we go. Looking at the first season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you notice a similarly muddy image due to not filming 16mm film well. Like Buffy, My So-Called Life does get better at its lighting as the show goes on. I wonder how this quality compares to the home video release. I feel like you have slapped me with a glove. As for the show itself, I think the problem for me was I've seen some other shows take My So-Called Life's example and develop it in ways that they couldn't have done in the mid-90s. A lot of the plot comes off as after-school special.
But that was the 90s. That was the way they told things in the 90s. And it
also... clearly you have not seen an after-school special from the 90s.
That's very true.
This is, like, far, far pulled back.
Like, but you thought that was dark. There was a light. There wasn't even that dark filter on the camera. Yeah.
But I digress. But you can see the show doing more by having things like Jordan's illiteracy and Rayanne's alcoholism not getting swept under the rug by the next episode. That was a big change in narrative television in the 90s.
Yes.
Yeah. Of course.
I'm so excited. I'm so scared.
Right, scared.
Oh my God. Can I just say. Sorry, not to interrupt you, Matt, and your wonderful critique of the quality of a 1994 show translating to Hulu. But did anybody else get the feel that during the, you know, Rayanne goes to the hospital episode, that that was their I'm so excited, I'm so scared episode?
Perhaps.
But, like, it didn't get, as to Matt's point, it didn't get tied up in a nice bow after that.
Mm-hmm. It was more real to life.
Yes. Exactly.
It's more like, this is what could actually happen. And apparently, you can't mix alcohol and ecstasy. I didn't know that until now.
I think that common sense taught me that that was always a bad idea. I've listened to Miley Cyrus songs, okay? She really loved her Molly and her pot and her alcohol.
Yeah. It's like, I thought you pick one or the other.
You I thought you weren't supposed to mix alcohol with any sort of pills.
You're not. I'm joking.
Probably not.
Because of that Miley Cyrus song, but I'm just kidding. I knew that before, that I didn't need somebody that's 15 years younger than me to tell me that. But I digress.
Just saying.
I never tried it, but I just knew.
Okay, where were we?
I don't know.
Big change in narrative television. Of course, there was the groundbreaking character of Ricky, played by Wilson Cruz, an LGBTQ character whose sexuality was taken seriously, even in the standards and practices at the time restricting how they could portray that. Sidebar, remember when same-sex kisses used to be blurred and blacked out?
What?
Hey, listen, yeah. Disney just stopped cutting them out of movies, like, now. Yeah. Like, yesterday. Oh, yeah. Speaking of, and not to, like, you know, interrupt Matt's email, but, like, I forgot to mention this. We talked about Ricky before our break, but I also found it was, you know, very dating, but showed you, like, how far we've come, yet how far, you know, some people in America still haven't come. With that conversation between the English teacher and his partner, and how he originally did not offer Ricky a place to stay because he was scared it would get out that he was gay and he would lose his career.
Well, he was basically like, don't say gay.
Yeah. Yep. But then Ricky came over and he was like,
how cyclical we
are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then, like, Ricky came over.
His commitment to being a good teacher outwon his fear.
Right. But I just thought, like, so
how far we've come, and then how far we're backslidden.
Right, exactly.
Well, how far we're trying to come. Yeah. Hey, did you know that Oklahoma's legislature today introduced a bill that would make performing an abortion punishable by jail for 10 years?
Of course.
That's like pre-1920s shit right there. Anyway, we're not talking about that here. We're talking about Matt's email.
Okay, back to the email. Okay. Probably the biggest problem I had watching this was Angela and Jordan's relationship.
All teenage relationships are problematic.
Yep, that's kind of their function. While Angela's crush is definitely realistic for a teen to have, and kudos to the show for having an actual teenager in the role, I can't get it out of my head that when the show was made, Claire Danes was 15 and Jared Leto was 22, almost 23.
Yeah, I know. That's shit. That's
But that's also pretty common. I mean, that, I never have I ever.
Hell, the CW's been
Paxton
doing that.
Paxton is like 30s. I mean, we do this all the time. This is not new. We have not changed this. This is just the way casting in Hollywood is.
To be fair, you know, Jordan got held back quite a few times.
Yeah. Yeah. It's clear that, like, Jordan Catalano's character, I mean, he was driving. It's clear he was at least 16. He could have been 22. We don't really know.
Well, no, he'd been left back at least twice. So he was at least twice. 2 years older than her.
Yeah. I mean, it is a little bit creepy to think that he was like an adult, but I didn't realize that. But I'm glad that Claire was 15. And I have nothing more to say about that.
Okay, yeah, let's just move on. Yes, we agree with you, Matt. That was blah, blah, blah.
Yes. It doesn't help now that there are some allegations surfacing about Leto and his behavior towards teens.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, that's a long list. The fact that this is perhaps the biggest storyline in the whole series makes it really tough to look around.
See, here's how you look around it, Matt.
When we were on break, I told you to Google 30 Seconds to Mars cult.
Yeah, well, okay. And I just got a beer, so.
Yeah. priorities.
I meant tomorrow.
Here's what I will say, Matt. Here's how you look around that when you're looking back at something from 1994. And if you don't want to, that's also totally valid. But here's how I do it. I just do not stay informed about pop culture. And I don't know these things.
Oh, man.
It's a good system.
Mm. Yeah.
It's working for me. Sleep better at night, too.
I don't know. That's a whole other discussion for a whole other show, is whether or not we as people have a responsibility to stay up to date on those types of things.
Well, okay. There's like up to date on the news and up to date on like
what. Right. And you're like, or my so-called life.
News adjacent.
Right. News adjacent, yeah. Or news adjacent regarding something that I've liked for 37 years.
Yeah. Okay, ladies, we've got like four more paragraphs.
Okay, sorry.
Speed through this. I'm gonna need a little like.
Sorry.
Hold our comments to the end.
Oh, it's so hard,
keep
but
your,
okay.
Yeah, keep your
that's
hands.
She said.
Hands and legs inside until the end of the ride. Mm. Okay. I also don't want to be that guy. Well, I think you kind of already are that guy at this point. Sorry, but I have to be. The Freaks and Geeks was better, guy. Oh, dear. And to get it out of the way, James Franco sucks, too. Okay, something we can all agree on. I don't know if it helped that I watched that show while I was in high school, but that show connected with me and my experience a lot more than my so-called life did. Then again, maybe my so-called life needed to crawl so that other 90s shows looking to deglamorize high school like Buffy, Daria, and Freaks could run.
I completely agree. I agree with that sentiment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Paved the way, which means that it was foundational.
Groundbreaking, yeah. If you
groundbreaking.
Will.
Groundbreaking.
Doesn't always have to be like, oh, which one is better.
Exactly. I agree. Okay. Two more paragraphs.
Okay.
Ultimately, I didn't hate the show. I watched the whole thing, and I'm frankly trying to finish this feedback so you can get it for this week's show. It was interesting to see young Claire Danes and to know she was certainly a rising star, although I expected to see a few more familiar faces of actors early in their career. Besides Danes and Leto, I knew Cruz from 13 Reasons Why and Mr. Kaminsky, Jeff Perry, who's the actor's name, as one of those, hey, it's that guy, guys.
Yes. Okay.
and on show, I didn't watch Scandal. Oh, he was on Scandal. I didn't know that. I also did not watch Scandal. Behind the scenes, I saw producer Alan Pohl.
Okay.
Let's go with Pohl, P-O-U-L, from 6 Feet Under, composer W.G. Snuffy Walden from The West Wing, and story editor / writer Jason Katzman, Friday Night Lights. I wanted to see what else creator Winnie Holtzman had done since, and it looks like writing the book for the musical Wicked is it. Huh. So I'm guessing she's doing just fine these days. So this has gone long enough. You're already 15 minutes into recording. To the
An hour and 15 minutes.
Two and a half hours and 15 minutes. So hopefully you have a little more time for my rambling. Looking forward to this month's assignment. Go now, go, Matt.
Go now. Go.
Okay, Matt, just baseline, I'm going to say what I said to Daniel when he came in and was snickering at part of the show.
Oh.
You were never a 15-year-old girl, so you will never completely understand.
Boom! Mic drop.
That's true.
I will also say, Matt, I appreciate you for completing the assignment.
That's true.
Matt always has fancy
snaps for again. That. Yeah.
Thank you, Matt, though. We appreciate hearing a different perspective, though.
That is true.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, this is the man who also hates the third act of Elf. So
that's true. Now, sometimes you are a great foil to us. I gotta say, sometimes it is great and so much fun just to disagree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I really did. The more the show went on, I got more invested in the characters, and I don't know, just really liked it.
We might start braiding my hair again and just like small little braids.
I thought about doing that too while I was watching it. I was like, I could do that in front. Just coming down.
Graf, style icon.
Icon. Yeah. Seriously, all the clothes though, all the clothes. Because here's the thing that was brilliant about clothes in the 90s. You didn't have to worry about if anything matched because by definition, you're trying to go anti-match. And everything is so comfortable. All of our clothes nowadays are so fucking tight. Why not just go multiple layers, super comfy?
They don't even all have to be clean.
Yeah.
They could have just been on your floor. Like, you know, just put it on. It's fine. Who cares?
Love it.
We live in a world where Kurt Cobain is no longer alive. It doesn't, like, even matter.
Well, yeah. I mean, didn't he die in 1994? It was, like, right around filming.
Yeah, they, like... Clearly, they like wrote that in. Like, he must have like died as they were recording because it's like they had the Rolling Stone cover.
Yeah.
And like, clearly, that was like inserted into the episode, like after the fact.
Yeah. It was a huge moment.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we have a bit of other feedback that isn't related to this. We've got a lot of feedback actually this week, which was awesome. And we'll save some of it for next week just for time purposes. In regards to Turning Red, which we talked about last week, Matt's blaining Amanda Seyfried's
last name. Seyfried's
last name rhymes with my bread. I never knew that. Seyfried. Okay. Seyfried. I'm never going to remember that, but I'm going to try. and this is more of an interpretation, since I don't know for sure, but I think Turning Red was set in I think Turning Red was set in 2002 because that's when Domi Shi, the director, was 13.
Was 13. Yes, and I watched the making of special.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, right, it was really fun. That is why that checks out.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then Dennis says, I visited Toronto several times. It's a wonderfully diverse, over 1,000 over 1,000. It's a lot. That's like way too many. Let me start again. I've visited Toronto several times. It's wonderfully diverse. Over 100 languages are spoken there. A modern city with nearly 3 million people, 700,000 of which are ethnic Chinese. Chinatown is just west of downtown. There's also a Koreatown, the setting of Kim's Convenience, a 5-season comedic sitcom now on Netflix. I highly recommend it. I do want to watch Kim's Convenience at some point.
Nice. Yeah, I've heard good things about it.
I heard great things. And then I think, all right, we got a quick Mass What She Said. Let's do the quick Mass What She Said, and then we will finish up with an email from Brian, the not DP specialist.
Are we still doing this on the 17th?
Should last about an hour and a half.
We hump slacked.
We were going to do it last week.
I'll get there.
Look, I gave you a bonus.
Shandy, I believe the next one is yours.
I've been doing it for a lot longer.
We gotta do it, guys! And then we have an email from... Like I said, we have an email from Brian, the non-DP specialist. Shandy, do you want to read that?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Brian, our favorite non-DP specialist, writes in The Never-Ending Story and the Golden Shandy. Hello there, Shandy, Colleen, and Amanda. Reverse alphabetical order of the names there. That is excitement plus. Woot! I hope the last 2 weeks treated you and yours well, and that you were able to watch all of those episodes of My So-Called Life. I failed spectacularly in that endeavor, as I did not watch even one. But I did. Well, I hope you don't mind spoilers, because we just...
It's like, then you are really going to dislike this episode.
Right. Still watch it. I think it's worth it. Mm-hmm. But I did watch The Neverending Story, but not the other two movies. At least I was 33% successful in knocking those out. More on that below. Colleen, thanks for throwing me the Mockingjay sign and the offer of a medal. You said, all I have, though, is the golden Shandy, and you probably don't want that. Now, hang on. I'm sorry I'm not up to speed on my broadcast trivia, but what is the golden Shandy? It sounds vaguely unwholesome, and now I have got to hear the story.
It's a penis.
Trophy.
It's a penis trophy. Mm-hmm. It's a small penis trophy. It's about 3 inches in length. Girth. Regular.
Which, to be fair, is just like what I happen to find online. It has the length and girth of the penis trophy has no relation to
it. It's me. Not super to scale, but it was it was the championship prize. It's the trophy, if you will, for back when we did The Tribe, a Survivor podcast with John
Alice.
John and Alice and Tim and Paul. And anyway, so we did that. And
a different Jay.
And a different Jay. Jay Fisher. Mm. Oh, Jay Fisher.
Our favorite, not your husband.
I know. Jay. Oh, love that man. but yeah, so we did The Tribe, a Survivor podcast. And it finished about 5 years ago at this point. Six years ago, maybe even. It was
as we were starting this podcast. There was a crossing of the baton, a handing over of the baton.
Yeah, there was
handing over of the golden Shandy, if you will.
The last season that we did The Tribe, I believe, was the fall 2016 season of Survivor. So we were done. I think we were done by the spring 2017 season. But anyway, the winner of our Survivor Fantasy League for The Tribe would get this golden Shandy penis trophy mailed to them. And it was passed along, and I was the last winner, I believe, and kept it.
Yeah. And why, like, help me remember, why was it called the Golden Shandy? Because it could have been, like, the Golden Colleen, the Golden Tim, the Golden Paul.
Yeah, but Shandy
but
sounds
have
more
the
like...
the same ring.
Yeah, Shandy sounds more like Boner, so that's what we named it.
Is it because I had a boner for Malcolm?
No.
Was it because I talked about stuff like that?
No, because the Golden Shandy, I believe, started... before you were a co-host.
Oh, shit, that's possible.
I think that's, yeah, it was before
Did I mail it to John even pre-
I don't remember. I'll ask John.
John will have to, yeah.
I will text him, John and I will ask him. He will remember. However, that is how the Golden Shandy came to be. So if you would like a 3-inch long penis, you know where to find one.
And you were correct. It is vaguely unwholesome.
Completely unwholesome. Sits on my windowsill. There's your story.
Brian, our favorite non-DP specialist, goes on to say, Raleigh isn't so far from Atlanta, and I'd love to make it over there that weekend for adult beverages, stories, fun, and mayhem, but it's not in the cards this year, sadly. How about 2023?
We'll be here.
We'll hold you to it.
I'll meet up too then.
Woohoo!
I can drive. I can take the next 13 months to get my liver back into fighting shape. Perhaps I can join one of the Zoom calls in the interim.
Sure.
Yes. Ooh, that sounds good.
Yes. Yeah. Now some thoughts about The Neverending Story. I did enjoy this movie, cheesy 80s special effects aside. Actually, the cheese added a lot of flavor. It sent a fine message to kids who are bullied. Gird your loins and save Fantasia to score a floppy-eared luck dragon so that you can return to your world to exact that sweet, sweet revenge on your enemies. Or is that too cynical? I honestly really did like it. It started out hot with the stereotypical cold, toxic, masculine 80s dad trying and failing miserably to connect with his son. WTF was up with his blended breakfast with a raw egg in it. So go salmonella.
That's what I've been saying this whole time. It's a mystery.
So gross.
We need the Olsen twins on it. I'm not playing the theme song again. If you don't know it by now, shame on you. Shame.
And you can rent it on the internet for like $2.99 if you want to see the movie. I dug the rock guy and thought the scene close to the end where he was looking at his hands and lamenting that they weren't good enough to save everyone was heartbreaking and well done. Atreyu losing his horse buddy in the swamp of sadness got me right in the feels, since our favorite dog at the shelter, King Bob, had to be put down the day before. Aww. I watched the movie.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
I'm so sorry.
My daughter and I, who loved that big goofball for the last 19 months, were there with him at the end. The suck coefficient was high. Oh,
I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry. But that's really special that you were there. Yeah. Pour one out for King Bob, hell of a dog and buddy. That one will sting for a long time. Got dusty in here for a minute, but now I'm all right.
R.I.P. King Bob.
Yeah. Anyway, in a fantasy movie, the most unbelievable thing I witnessed was Atreyu being able to look at the sphinxes / sphinxi. What is the plural of sphinx? In the eye and be able to talk.
It's the same.
him being able to look in the eye and talk in complete sentences. Those were most definitely perky naked breasts there. Is that why this was rated PG? No way an adolescent isn't flummoxed in that situation. No chance. I tip my cap to your discipline, Atreyu. Godspeed. They were perky.
I think perky nipples was like, you know, the it thing of the 80s.
It carried over, I would say, into the 90s, because I'm always thinking about, like, Rachel's. Exactly. I love that we went straight to Rachel.
Well, you know, God bless Jennifer Aniston. Perkiest nipples in the 90s.
Oh dear.
Where's the lie though?
No, there is none.
Yeah.
Some people are just genetically blessed.
Next up is Labyrinth. It's rented. Now I've just got to watch it.
Oh, I hope by the time you hear
hold
this
on email. Tight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell us what you think, because the Labyrinth, if you liked the Neverending Story, and I love that you liked it, Labyrinth is just
way better.
In for a treat.
I mean, right up your alley. Yes.
I hope you've watched it by the time you hear this email.
Yes. Thanks for your worries about 16 Candles and dealing with problematic movies, life issues in the past, etc. Lots of food for thought. Is this the Molly Ringwald article to which you were referencing? And it's a New Yorker article. I think this is, yeah, it's from 2018, April 6th, 2018.
Oh, happy anniversary article.
Yeah. So it's a great read if you haven't read it. In the New Yorker by Molly Ringwald, April 6th,
I will put it in the show notes. I know nobody ever looks at them in the show notes, so whatever, but I will do it just in case anybody wants to.
But yes, that is the article to which I was referring, and after we talked about it last time, I reread it, and it's, you know, it holds up on a reread, too. I may have peed a little upon hearing the sentence, you were leaking fart.
Well, if I made you leak pee to leak fart, then I'm going to die happy. That's it. I've fulfilled my purpose on Earth.
I have never heard the phrase leaking fart. It is now in my lexicon. Thanks for that. The leaking farts may have to be a team trivia name. So, did lighting the match work?
No.
Was the stench eliminated, or did you just get your eyebrows singed?
No.
Using flame to eliminate leaking farts, fart odors seems like a myth to me. Too bad the Mythbusters aren't still around, as that question seems right up Adam's alley, so to speak.
Lighting the match actually does work. We have a box of matches in our bathroom, if you're particularly stinky. Yeah, and it totally works. Like, that sulfur is all you can smell.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
100%.
Yep. Huh. Well, I've covered boobs, farts, a cool dog, and demonstrated an uncanny ability to put your names in reverse alphabetical order, which means I should wrap this up and go watch the NCAA championship game. Thanks for the laughs and thought-provoking topics in your podcast. Stay safe out there. Your friendly neighborhood non-DP Brian.
Hey, UNC lost. That's all I know. I don't know who they were playing and who won.
Yeah. See, again, like, that part of, like, keeping up with pop culture. I don't know.
Yeah.
When I scroll through the news, I literally very quickly scroll past that part.
Shandy, yep. When you move down sports. Here, I also don't follow.
Sports. It's basketball, right?
Yeah. That's college basketball.
March Madness, am I right?
College basketball. I don't follow college basketball, but just so you know, Shandy, it's a huge thing down here. Maybe more so in the Triangle because you have, like, Duke and UNC, and they have, like, this, like, epic rivalry. But, like, it's a big thing in North Carolina. And it's actually kind of fun how everybody gets so, like, just being, like, a New York fan and everybody gets, like, so into, like, Yankee stuff and Mets stuff or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of cool to watch them all get excited about, like, college teams.
I don't know. I would say of all of the sports, basketball is perhaps the one that I like the best and actually, like, know the rules to.
Oh.
So I guess I could, like, get into it. I played basketball in middle school.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. You're going to fit right in here. Research your teams a little bit. I swear to God, like, research your teams just to know the basics.
Okay, notice that I said middle school and, like, not even high school.
People down here love their college basketball. Like, they wear their blues because there's a different color blue for each one. Like, you know, each team has a different shade of blue. They love their blues down here, and it is fierce rivalries, right? Like,
I mean, I could see myself, like, maybe getting into the women's teams, but, like,
No, I'm not saying get into it. I'm just saying recognize who plays for what. Like, UNC has a team, Duke has a team. Coach K is the coach for Duke. He coached for 30 years. He just retired. He lost his last game.
This is, like, knowledge that would take up space in my brain and other stuff would fall out.
So. Very true. Very true. Okay. It might help you understand billboards while you're driving. That's what I'm trying to say. Because there's a couple of type of billboards in North Carolina, if I may. You have your South of the Border, which actually I believe just got demolished, so they might not be there anymore. You have your anti-abortion advertisements. You know, like, call this number to save a child's life. Billboards, that's the further south you get. So you'll deal with more of those. You have your, you know, Coach K is the best billboards, which I guess they won't have next year because he just retired. And then you have, like, your UNC all the way. And, like, I don't know. They really like their sports. The end. Once in a while, they're like, oh, the Hurricanes. They won a bunch of stuff, too. Anyway,
what was that?
Hurricanes is a hockey. Okay. I think that's where we're going to have to stop right here because we're getting kind of long. Again, happy birthday to Judy. Did anybody have anything fun happen over the last week, real quick before we go? I went to Disneyland. That was kind of cool.
That was pretty cool.
It's pretty awesome.
I ran 20 miles.
I saw that. That looked fun.
That is impressive.
Last time when I had my terrible marathon, I didn't do my 20-mile run because we were in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
And I just never – and so I, like, ended up starting to taper, like, super early. And I think that's a big part of why I had such a terrible marathon. So – but I've been having, like, these, like, feet problem recently with, like, shoes. And it's been a whole thing since February. So I was really nervous that I wouldn't even be able to complete it. But I got the shoe thing figured out and I was able to run and finish it. So I'm happy about that. Marathon's in, like, 2.5 weeks.
It's at the last week of April, right?
That's, like, I can't even understand how many miles. I'm just so impressed by you.
Yay! I can't wait to hear about that.
Yeah, I just kind of want to finish and, like, I know it's not going to be a PR. Like, it's not going to be, you know, but I just want to, like, not have what I had last time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so good.
That's so I'm so excited for you. Amanda, anything other than Eden birthday news?
It's our exciting stuff is coming
so
this week.
Hold this thought till next week.
Yeah. I went to a baby shower in Connecticut this weekend. So the mother to be was a friend I haven't seen since before the pandemic. So that was exciting to get to see her in person. So that was cool. But yeah, we're kind of in the calm before the storm right now.
Nice. Yeah, we went to Disney. I wrote a blog about it, callrites.com, callrites.com, if you're interested. I won't waste time here talking about it. I did take a notary public class today, to get certified for work.
Cool.
Right.
Which was, you know, it was what it was.
I kind of thought you already were a notary public.
So I did. I took it in 2013, and I took it at the end of April 2014. And it's, you have 3 months to apply, so I did my application right after I took it, and then you have to wait 45 days to be sworn in. And within that 45 days, Zachary was born, and I was sworn in when he was 10 days old. And by the time I went back to work 3 months later, like, the whole notary thing, like, it was kind of dropped, it was never brought up, I had kind of forgotten about it, so everything kind of lapsed. I never really did anything with it, which, again, is partially my fault. Like, I should have, like, I know that, like, I have a, like, you might say, oh, you should have taken care of it before you left, even if you weren't sworn in. But, like, as I learned today, and I believe I was taught then, is they won't send you your stamp and your seal and all that until after you take the oath, right? Because it's not valid until it is, until then.
No, that makes sense.
And, like I said, literally, it was June 24th that I went and got sworn in. So Zach was 10 days old. So, and I, you know, had to get that done because the time thing and blah, blah, blah. And I was there because I got that traffic ticket, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, long story short, yes. I took it today, and the teacher, the first half of the class was really nice, and, you know, it was a fun class, and then she comes back from lunch, and I don't know if she, I don't know what happened during lunch, but, like, it got weird, and by weird, I mean, we were talking about the absentee voter ballots, right, and she talked about how you have to notarize, if they can't get two witnesses, you have to notarize the ballot. And I asked the question, actually, like, do you watch them do the ballot or not? Because it wasn't clear from how she said it. She goes, oh, no, you have to watch them fill out the ballot. And I was, like, taken aback. I was like, seriously? Like, you have to watch somebody fill out their ballot? Like, I don't want to. Like, I wouldn't want somebody to know. And I'm thinking, oh, that must be such a Republican rule, right? Like, in North Carolina, because all of our laws are, like, written by fucking Republicans. So, you know, it was like, you have to watch them fill it out so you know that they're the people that voted for. And then she starts talking about how, like, last year during COVID, they made it so you only need one witness and it didn't need to be notarized. And then she was like, and that's why the election is so was so contested, because without showing voter ID, like, you need to show it to send an absentee ballot, but you don't need to show voter ID to vote in person. So, like, just anybody could just fill out a ballot, multiple ballots. And I'm like, how many ballots are these people being? Like, everybody's just sent one absentee ballot. Like, how many things? So anyway, but I didn't even get into that. She's like, anybody could just fill out as many ballots as they wanted to if you're not showing ID. And, like, she's a fucking teacher that's representing this college that I'm taking the class at. So she was just saying how anybody can vote multiple times without showing ID. So, like, at that point, she's like, am I right? Like, isn't it dumb that you should, like, this is just my opinion, so I don't mean to offend anybody that she has a different opinion of me, but aren't I right? Like, isn't it just ridiculous to not have to show ID? And, like, she was literally like, am I right? Right? Aren't I right? So at that point, everybody's kind of talking, and I'm in the back row, and I'm like, oh, like Mark Meadows' wife did? Because Mark Meadows, in case anybody doesn't know, Mark Meadows, former North Carolina congressman, former chief of staff during the January 6th insurrection, it was found that his wife actually voted, and then she registered to vote same day and voted a second time. So she got caught for that. So I was like Mark Meadows' wife did, and nobody heard me, of course, because at that point there's so much chatter and I'm so far away. But... I just default louder to, there's almost no cases of widespread voter fraud like that. That's just something people say to scare you. And she looks at me and she's like, well, but she never acknowledges that, like, somebody said something different. She just glances in my direction and she's like, well, you know, There's just without showing identification, there's just lots of fraud that can happen. That's why the election is so hotly contested, because without showing ID, you don't know how many times people voted. And I was like, and at that point, like, I think my face was just, like, seething. And she's just like, I shouldn't have said something. I just want to know that my views don't go for the college's views.
Yeah, she shouldn't have said something.
My views don't stand for the college's views. But am I right, people? I mean, right? Isn't it just ridiculous? And then once she had people, like, nodding along with her, but not me, because prior to this, right before this conversation started, it was the one thing that you can't charge as a notary for is to notarize absentee ballots. And she rolls her eyes. She's like, because of course the government wants to stifle your opportunities or some shit like that. That's not exactly what she said. What? But like, it was implied, like, you know, the government wants to keep you from making, it was implied like that, but it wasn't, those are not the words. Yeah, so yeah, please yeah, don't, yeah. You know. And I was like, hey, isn't that a poll tax? Like, even if you charge $5, right. Like, right. It's a free and fair election. If you're charging someone to certify your vote, then therefore it's breaking the law. And she looks at me and she goes, oh, right, free and fair election. You're right. So then she's talking about voter ID.
Oh my God.
I wanted to be like, excuse me, it costs $60 to get a new ID in I don't remember what it is here, but I'm pretty sure in New York it's like 50 or 60 bucks. But I wanted to be like, hey, it's a lot of money to get a identification or a driver's license. Aren't you concerned about disenfranchising people? But I didn't. Disenfranchising people was on the tip of my tongue. But at that point I was like, no. This class is going to go prolonged if I do that, so just shut up, Colleen. So then we come back. So then, you know, whatever. We have a break every hour, and we come back from our break, and I walk in, and she's talking to people about the legal system and how she's so against the legal system in America because it just really protects the guilty rather than the innocents.
What?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't talking about like Brock Turner, the rapist. She was talking about, I think we all know who she was talking about. She's like, you know, criminals are walking the streets and like anybody is just walking the streets. They're just protecting the guilty. And I was like, girl, I can call some legal aid attorneys on speed dial right now and they're going to put you in your fucking place. Like, to me about that.
Trump is walking the streets.
That's right. Very true. You're right. It does favor the guilty. There are examples. You're right. You're right. So maybe we have
the highest incarceration rate like in the world.
We do.
So it's like, actually, it's not like we're not throwing people in jail. Like we're throwing too many.
You're right. I should have said that.
We're entitled to our own facts.
Yeah. It's like, how many people would you prefer to be in jail? Like what? 50%? Do you want to go up to 50% of the population? Like what?
Well, the best was it. She's like, and they're trying to take away your guns. Well, they can take away, they're going to have to pry my gun from my cold, dead hands. And I was like, this is a teacher. How is this happening right now? I'm at a community college. I'm not at Liberty University. Why? Why, God, why?
How is this real life?
That was my experience. God. And I didn't feel comfortable speaking up because these happened over several different, like, you know, periods of time. And by the end, I just didn't feel comfortable. I was like, well, I just want to pass
because
this
because she's creating a classroom environment where she's clearly showing her biases. And so, of course, students who have opposing views are not going to feel comfortable. That's insane.
Right. And you know something, though, I just want to point out that, like, even if she's talking about people like Donald Trump, like if she was, like, say she was frauded and there's no proof and that's what she was talking about. Because she mentioned how she was in litigation with something. Even if she's talking about that, like, she's failing to actually recognize that the justice system is actually messed up for a whole bunch of other reasons as well. It's not just because she's not getting her way in litigation. And, like, most people in her situation of that persuasion, they don't actually fail to realize that the people they're voting for and, like, supporting and throwing money at and, like all they can see is they want to keep their guns and they can't see anything to spite their face that maybe if you don't want people that are ripping you off to be prioritized, maybe don't vote for the people that are ripping you off.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting concept. Also, I would say, like, the people in the class, like why is she sharing her legal woes and in classroom
situation?
It was like as soon as the voter thing was broken,
like she was like, I'm amongst friends, except me. And me. Because I was very uncomfortable the rest of the class. It was like, man, keep your misinformation out of this. Like, she was repeating talking points that they were clearly talking points. And I want to be like, oh my God.
Like, I just, as a teacher on this call, like,
even if students say things that I agree with politically, I don't acknowledge, like, my agreement with that. Like, yeah. If that makes sense, you know?
Because yeah. It's called professionalism.
Yeah. When she said, like, but I'm right? Isn't that just the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard? Like, not showing ID? And I was like, oh, cool. Are you going to, like, donate a whole bunch of money and drive a whole bunch of people to the DMV to get their identifications? Because America is a lot more than people that live with easy access to places. And you would probably be the first to complain that the wait for a real ID is months, which it is in North Carolina.
It is kind of a funny prospect of, like, I'm like, how do I register to vote? I just don't even remember.
You can do same-day registration so here, as evidenced by Mark Meadows' wife. All right. On that note, we have gone on for way too long this week. We've got a lot of feedback we need to catch up on next week. I think we're, like, just tallying up Andy emails. Sorry, Andy. I'm so sorry.
Sorry, Andy. Sorry. Andy has some exciting news, but we'll save it for next
week. Okay, cool. So we were talking about, and we would love your feedback. If you want to comment anywhere, you don't have to send an email in. You can just comment wherever is easiest for you, because we'd love your feedback about what we should do next month. Some of the things that we threw out, and of course, this is all subject to change, but please let us know. We were thinking of either 90s Meg Ryan, like, romantic comedy movies, like Sleepless in Seattle, We've Got Mail, the other one we talked about that I can't remember off the top of my head. We were thinking about that, or coming-of-age movies like Clueless, She's All That, 10 Things I Hate About You. I don't know. We were just kicking out ideas. We have decided, though, for sure, that on August 2nd, we are going to review the book and the movie for When the Crawdads Sing, because the movie comes out July 15th, and that's a Friday, so that will give everybody 2 weeks to see the movie. So prepare for that. We are 100% ready for that one.
Just a note, it's Where the Crawdads Sing.
Sorry, Where the Crawdads Sing. I stand corrected. We had some suggestions from the Facebook group. Jessica said favorite disaster movie.
Oh.
Twister is one. Day After Tomorrow is another one. I like
Twister's
that.
Twister's great.
Twister's good.
Twister's really great. You know what else I like is, what is that one where they come from the ground and go up? Kevin Bacon. It's a Kevin Bacon movie.
That's not Footloose.
That's not Footloose.
You'll think of it. Don't worry.
The monsters, they're on the ground.
I don't know. If it's not dancing, I can't help you.
Dennis suggested Inventing Anna, which I told him that we would be talking about that as soon as you guys finish watching it, but probably not dedicating a whole episode to it. Yellow Jackets, which is on Showtime. I don't have Showtime, but I've heard Yellow Jackets is awesome. It's like a Lost kind of show where you like a think about it show. I don't have Showtime. I'd have to do a free trial as well. So if you guys want to do that, I think we should sync that up. Jay and I have had that on our list, though, for several months. Halt and Catch Fire.
I
will say,
every time I add, like, a new free trial, I end up really liking the platform and then, like, very tempted to keep
it. I know, right? It's tough. But I think Christina Ricci is in.
Oh, love Christina Ricci. One of my all-time... Juliette Lewis. Shit. Right. I was just going to say, if we're talking about Christina Ricci movies, Casper is fucking great.
It is on Hulu.
What? Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because I've been nonstop watching a 90s show for the past week and a half, but it popped up right when I launched the app today.
So, so good.
So I don't know if it's always been there or if this is new, but it is on Hulu.
Well, good times. We can add that to the list, because also we can just add, like, Christina Ricci Supernatural movies, like both Adam's Families and Casper.
Oh, yeah.
That would be pretty enjoyable, actually.
Also, I would love that.
If we're doing coming-of-age movies, I know we want to stick to three, but it would very much want to add Now and Then.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, that's like...
You brought up Christina Ricci, so I feel like now we kind of have
to. No, we have to. My high school friends and I, that's like our movie, and we're each a character.
Yeah. We could also do a pairing of Now and Then and Stand By Me.
Oh! It's sort of a
similar movie.
Boys and girls.
Different genders. I think that might be interesting to watch them both and talk about them as a package deal.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll figure it out. We will have an answer definitely by the time we record next week. Let us know wherever you want to let us know. Let us know. But on that note, we've been recording for 2 hours now. It is midnight, and it is time for us to go. thank you so much for the feedback we got tonight. If you have any feedback about our discussion or want to let us know what to talk about next, anything at all, thebroadcasters3@gmail.com. We'll probably have a pretty feedback-heavy episode next week just because we've got a bunch built up. Thank you to the patrons, especially the patrons that contribute at a certain level, and that would be Eckhart Rickner, Tack from Tokyo, Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with a Plan, and Ed the Creepy Mailman. Thank you guys so much. And yeah, I think that's about it. Send us an email, thebroadcasters3@gmail.com or 331-276-2373. Find us on Instagram, Twitter, blah, 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 blah. All right. On that note, everybody, thanks for listening. My name is Colleen.
My name's Sananda.
And I'm Shani.
Peace out, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.